podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Hello everyone, my name is Scott McLeod. Welcome to a very special episode of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat. That is absolutely gallus. As we are here to preview NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool. But first, let me introduce my panel. I myself like to think of myself as Mark Coffey, and that I have an older brother who gets most of the attention, even though it can be argued I'm more talented. It's Ross McLeod. Hey, Ross.
I don't even know how to respond to that one, to be honest with you.
That's quite a good one.
Right.
Ross is the host of our upcoming Royal Rumble quiz, and Ross, be honest, is there a roundabout Viscera?
There was meant to be a Viscera round, but the corrupt overlords that are Kwaku and Stephen Wilson shouted me down from it. So there will be, they did think it would give Gary an unfair advantage.
If there was a Viscera round, it would please our next member of the panel. He's absolutely howling on the hoops. It's Gary Cannon.
Thanks, Scott. I love that 3 seconds in and we've got a Viscera reference into an NXT UK takeover.
I know Kwaku is listening to this right now going, oh, for sake.
Did you notice I said NXT UK takeover and didn't do a Johnny Sane and say NXT takeover Blackpool UK?
Johnny Sane's like 105 year old. He'd rather be in bed with a biscuit and a cup of tea. Leave me alone.
Obviously, who better to talk about NXT UK Blackpool, because we are going to be in attendance there, yep, along with Sarah Grieve, who couldn't be here because, in her words, Scott, stop messaging you. I'm not going to be in your podcast. It's 2 a.m. And also, Lucy will be there, but she asked for too much money. Dolly, you get a stick of rock in Blackpool, and that's that.
Stock of rock in Blackpool.
I know, we've got celebrations in Haribo. Clearly, we did not negotiate well enough.
Those are for the adults.
We've got on Saturday morning a 3 and a bit hour road trip to the Blackpool. The road to take over for us probably starts at 12 noon on Saturday.
It starts just going on the motorway pointing to signs. Yes.
I think the Beastie Boys song No Sleep Till Blackpool doesn't have as much a ring to it.
Well, it might cause some trouble on the motorway when we see the Blackpool sign and we stop the car to get out to take a picture of the point to sign.
It's not the same without the pyro going off around it though, is it? Before we get it, maybe make sure you're subscribed to us on all good podcasting sites, Anchor, iTunes, Spotify. Give us a wee like, rate and subscribe. And make sure you give us 5 stars, probably 6. It's not possible, don't be stupid. And make sure to follow us on all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, all at Suplex Retweet. But first, let's get into NXT UK as a whole. Also, the UK brand's been going since 3 years ago at Blackpool with the first UK tournament. And obviously, it's good that they're going back to where they started. But NXT UK, the show itself, was not announced until the Royal Albert Hall. What was your thoughts on this announcement? It kind of feels like we knew the show was coming, but it's felt like ages until it was announced again.
Well, I was at the Royal Albert Hall the night it was announced, and I was doing some live tweeting for Suplex Retweet, and to say my phone went into meltdown on the back of that, so I got the little video clip of Triple H announcing it, and we broke the news. I think we were probably one of the first sites to break the news.
Yes, follow Suplex Retweet on Twitter for breaking wrestling news.
Yeah, I was, whilst it was rumoured that it was coming, it had been rumoured for a long time,
yeah,
and granted it probably was only the World of Sport getting commissioned that caused WWE to act. Mm-hmm. So in the world of WWE, you can, even though something's rumoured, you can't believe it's going to happen until it happens. So I was excited when it was announced. I left the arena. I loved the 2 nights of the show there. I left the arena absolutely buzzing, but then became a bit frustrated at the lack of information from WWE, because we knew that tapings were happening,
yeah,
but we had no idea when this was going to air and what it was going to look like, and then suddenly we got the little clip of trailers saying coming soon, and then it was here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they even announced touring dates for the tapings. They had Cambridge, Birmingham, Plymouth and Liverpool, and by the time it came out we only had one taping left. We were like 3 tapings behind, so people who went to Liverpool were probably very confused as to what the hell was happening.
Yeah, obviously we are ICW fans and we were a wee bit frustrated with the fact we were in the midst of an Aaron Echo Kenny Williams feud and
Joe
versus Mark as well. Kenny Williams obviously touring with the NXT UK brand, and Mark and Joe, as we'll talk about later, have become like a proper big part of this brand as it's becoming a whole there.
Mm-hmm.
obviously we'll talk about their storyline later, but we were a wee bit frustrated, obviously, people going to Shugs, you know, it was two big matches we were promised, and then NXT UK came out, they had no announced date, they did it in the middle of July on Shugs weekend, and then we were like, well, can we at least know when it's happening? Like, are you filming 4 weeks of TV and then airing it the next week? Are we, like, what is happening? And obviously, like we said, very frustrating, no information was given, and then I don't think it was that big an announcement, it was just sort of like on a Monday, then it's on Raw. Oh, by the way, see you on Wednesday. If you've left the telly on after NXT Normal, NXT UK's on, if you like.
I think, even though they couldn't be there, I think Shugs was still a binding weekend of wrestling regardless, because kind of still, like, they brought in all these big guys from outside, and although you wish they wouldn't always rely on the people outside, it was still a great weekend, I think.
Oh, Shugs was fantastic, and we got those matches in the end, we got them at the Hydro, but I think it had lost some of its momentum by then.
Yeah, it was one of the ones we know this is happening eventually, and I think that was, so we talk about NXT UK as a whole, a lot of people came out and said NXT UK as a brand will damage independence, and then I think a lot of ICW fans felt they were, like, they were verified in their opinion with that, because obviously we get two big matches taken off us, even though the shows were still amazing.
Yeah, but obviously, you said eventually they made it to the network, and I want to see what your thoughts are on the show so far, because within a couple of weeks of it airing, they suddenly started doing this thing where they're rushing it, airing two episodes a week rather than just the one. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like they're rushing it because you realise how far behind they were.
Yeah, it was like week three, wasn't it? So we got one episode a week for the first 2 weeks, and then week three we got episodes three and four. And I would say, just to go back a step, sort of, Scott, that I've really enjoyed it. The first couple of episodes I thought were a wee bit slower to get started, in the sense that they were establishing themselves and introducing the characters to us. But the last couple of weeks I thought they've been really good, particularly now they've got a destination that they're working towards. But that two episode thing, there was something one of the episodes I was watching recently said last month when Mastiff and Dennis got together, I was like, last month? That was last week.
I actually fell quite behind on NXT. I've still not fully caught up, but
not doing your homework for us.
Yes, Mr. Johnny Saint, the headmaster, would be upset. But yeah, I was like, oh, it's only about 9 weeks. I mean, I'm not back to college to the six. I mean, I can knock that out in about 2 days. You know what I mean? And then I forgot that it was two episodes a week, and I was way back at episode 3. I'm still only on episode 20, so I've got two weeks I've still not watched, and obviously at the time of recording, there are two more to go.
Yeah.
I think it's a wee bit peculiar, because one of the things that we know WWE is really good at is their production.
Yeah.
So I find it a wee bit odd that they've produced these shows and they've edited them, but they have continued to release them as if they are happening weeks apart and not just try to repackage it as a two-hour episode.
Yeah,
I think that would be smarter.
I think they were planning on going to, obviously, I think they still had the Blackpool date booked, but we saw it as well with Evolution, and we were rumoured to be getting an NXT UK women's title match, but they ended up putting that as the dark match because NXT TV still hadn't announced the NXT UK women's title tournament yet. Rhea Ripley in a dark match. Defending a title that, in kayfabe terms, did not exist yet. Like the $1 million title.
A wrestler reference and a $1 million title reference.
8 minutes in.
One of the other things I was going to say whilst we're talking about the production is the commentary. I much prefer the live commentary, you know, with the commentators in the arena reacting to the environment round about them. That clearly edited in bit with Vic Joseph and Nigel McGuinness talking with the background, the NXT UK logo behind them. I mean, it's so obvious it's edited in.
I spoke to Scott about this earlier. I hate the commentary because we slate Michael Cole for buzzwords that are in his ear. Lot of these are Nigel McGuinness off his own back. Did you know Nigel McGuinness wasn't 23 until he stepped in a ring? Because he mentions it every week. Every time we mention the likes of Rhea Ripley, Tony Storm, Tyler Bate, Dan Maloney, Pete Dunne, a lot of the younger half of the NXT UK roster. It's, I find it extraordinary they're here. I didn't step in the ring until I was 23 years old. And there was actually one of the episodes I was watching today, I think it was about episode 17 or 18. He does it twice in the one show. The same, you're like, my God, that, and obviously, Gary, you obviously wrote down a couple of people that you think are just there to fill out the roster. Every time Wild Boar appears on TV, Did you know Wild Boar had his teeth knocked out during a bar fight? Do you know Joseph Connors has only got half an ear? Yes, you tell us every week, even when he's not on screen.
Yeah, before we started recording, we were talking about the roster.
Yeah.
And in my view, there's a stack of folk that have been, that are signed, that are just there, mm-hmm. and it feels, from the outside looking in, that there's no set direction for those folk yet. So folk like Tyson T-Bone, for example. You know, he was in the first tournament, mm-hmm. got eliminated quite early on. Was
yeah,
it
first round
to Wolfie came out, yeah. And then second tournament he was in, I think, again, he went out in the first round again at Download. And has been sort of dropping around. So there's folk that we've seen in the last episode, Joseph Connors, I thought was going to probably be positioned as a bit more of a,
yeah.
you know, a bit more of a spotlight on him. He's not really had that in my view, but he cuts a pretty good promo in the last episode, which hints that there might be something coming for him. But yeah, I think there's a bunch of folk on the show that have yet to really establish themselves. I won't go through the whole list, but you know, people like Amir Jordan and a tag team with Kenny Williams, and Kenny Williams again is somebody that's feels like he's not really been given the, in my view, the opportunity to really shine just yet, because we know what he can do in the ring. Liguero, whilst he's been in, you know, he's had matches, again he just sort of feels there, yeah. mm-hmm. like, and you know these guys are capable of doing so much more.
See, the thing with Joseph Connors, in Defiant he was their world champion, mm-hmm. and he had great matches with Joe Hendry, he had a great feud with, he actually legitimately injured Drew McIntyre, and it worked into a great storyline. Mm-hmm. He was a really good champion, he's a really good sadistic heel, really good, like you said, talker. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned earlier with Nigel McGuinness's commentary, it's just like gimmick, half an ear. Like, I know, but like you wouldn't know it if he, like,
his hair covers it up.
His hair covers it 90% of the time. It's just like they kind of just bully him in those promo packages, like, go on, get your ear out.
I bet the commentators have like a paper with somebody's name and a single line or even single word next to, like, Amir Jordan dancing, Kenny Williams lucky, mm-hmm. mention this aspect of them at any possible moment. But
So I was just going to say, on the commentary, just building your point there, I was gutted when I seen Vic Joseph on it. I thought Maro done a great job at the tournament, mm-hmm. and before that we had JR doing it, and correct me if I'm wrong guys, but I think, was JR not signed with the intention, back signed by WWE with the intention that he would broadcast the UK division?
I think so, because he was going to be with World of Sport originally, he was on their pilot episode at New Year's.
Yeah, he was at World of Sport, he did the NXT UK Championship special from Norwich, which mm-hmm. led to the Bate Dunne Classic at NXT TakeOver Chicago, and he was on commentary for that as well. Mm-hmm. And before that, we had Michael Cole with the Greetings Grapples fan. Mm-hmm. That was his only bad line of the night. The rest of the, him and Nigel there were absolutely superb, but I think now it comes across, like you said, obviously that horrible green screen does come across very studio edited,
yeah.
and some of the stuff isn't very... I look forward to TakeOver, because when you watch it back on the network, I think their commentary will be stellar, because they're allowed to just let loose.
I should know the answer to this question I was just about to ask you, but I've not looked into it because I'm going to TakeOver. Is TakeOver live on the network on Saturday?
I think it should be, because the tournament originally was live, so I believe this will be live as well. But yeah, mm-hmm. talking about Vic Joseph, he's like a less charming or less charismatic Tom Phillips. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, Tom Phillips, who's a less charismatic Michael Cole. It's like a Russian doll, they're just all the same commentator.
Yeah, no. They get smaller and smaller and smaller. God knows what's in, what's comes after Buddy Vic Joseph.
Oh. But, like Adam Lee.
He was great in Gladiators. You're probably too young to remember the American Gladiators. He was brilliant on it.
Down as another obscure reference. Gladiators.
Yeah, Gladiators, Viscera, and who was the other one?
The Million Dollar Title.
The Million Dollar Title.
But telling you the list of people who are just there, it kind of stands out even more, the fact that there's only four matches that we know of for this card, and which leaves a lot of people off the guard, like Jordan Devlin. He's been a big part of,
mm-hmm. I think,
they're teasing a thing between him and Travis Banks. Like, how is that not a good, like, opening match? These two guys kicking the hell out of each other, because they hit hard.
I don't want to give away any spoilers, but from what I've read of the shows that are going to air on the network on Wednesday, there will be a fifth match added.
I hope it's that one.
We're not going to talk about it, so do you want to just tell us? If you're listening in, skip the next 5 seconds.
Well, the rumour I'd seen is that Travis Banks and Jordan Devlin will have a match at TakeOver, which I'm sure will be a great match.
Yeah.
But again, you know, luckily TakeOver sold out based on it being TakeOver, because the build for this this particular show has not been that stellar.
See, I tend to disagree, but that's because I've watched 18 episodes in the past 2 days, and I went out for a family party lunch today, and before waiting on my Uber, I was watching like the latest episode of NXT UK.
The reason I say that it's not been that stellar, if you think in chronological terms of when the programmes were released, the programme, the NXT UK episode that announced TakeOver, was aired 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the matches have subsequently been announced. And so you're announcing the card with essentially less than 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah, because I remember, obviously, Scott was watching it and writing about it for Wrestling Blogs. We plug for you there, Scott, right?
Yeah, it's particularly annoying writing for them because if it's two episodes, because I need to write about it and add another writer's thoughts in, and then that other writer writes the next one, and you send him my thought. So I need to rush to get mine's watched and then watch the other one. It's like, do we have no consideration for the little guys?
So we, obviously, you were covering it, and I was like, have they announced TakeOver yet? Like, no, like, really? Because I just went on Wikipedia and read the entire card.
Yeah, because, like, it's definitely difficult with pre-recorded programming, the era of social media, that everybody will find out about it eventually.
Yeah, I think hopefully going forward, the scheduling will work. So, like, NXT US is in a bit of a groove, and the way they do the recording, and the gap between the show. So there's going to be a show in Coventry in February, so I suspect the gap between them being filmed and released will be much shorter than the ones that we have seen.
Yeah, because they've announced a second night, but it's going to be the aftermath, so I assume February 21st and 22nd?
No, 23rd, 23rd, like the two nights. It's Friday, Saturday before the Square Go.
So, obviously, we've got they've got that, so I imagine it'll probably be like 5 weeks maybe, because they'll maybe do what they do with NXT US, which is maybe have two or three matches before the show, and then you'll have like maybe 4 weeks of TV, so that's 5 weeks worth of tapings.
Yeah, because up until now it looks like they've been doing 6 episodes per taping, so you
think like the 3 episodes of one night, 3 the next.
Exactly. And I suspect you're right, Ross, that at TakeOver they'll film a couple of matches, dark matches, which will then they'll use in subsequent weeks, and they might do a bit of a highlight or a recap of what happened, which is what they usually do in NXT after a TakeOver show, isn't it?
Yeah, like the whole Jordan Devlin, Travis Banks thing that they're teasing, it essentially based on Travis Banks not being home in ages. It was like Jordan Devlin was like a dad talking to his grown-up son, have you phoned your mum, son? When was the last time you talked to your mother?
It's unfortunate that Travis Banks turned up at the first tapings with that injury, because I suspect the spot he would have had would have been slightly different.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why everybody's complaining about this whole no-indie shows a week before a taping. I think Travis Banks' injury is the reason why that is happening.
Yeah, well, they've just recently, obviously, Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate and Ligero at the time of recording have all put out, like, thank you very much to, you know, like, and all the indie promotions they've worked with. And I think they're going to be the full-time ones. I think, as much as people are complaining, WWE are putting a lot of money into this, and there's a lot of investment going into this, and them telling people, like, a week before a big show or a week before a set of tapings, when they're only taping once every 6 weeks, I don't think it hampers guys that much. It's like, so 1 week out of every, sorry, 2 weeks out of every six, you can't do indie shows, because one, it's the rest period, and two, it's the taping. I don't think that's much of a hampering.
Yeah, it's a bit like a professional footballer. You wouldn't allow a professional football team wouldn't allow one of their players to go and play five-a-side the night before one of their matches. So I think it's perfect. I can understand why people have picked up on that point, but equally I think it's actually, if I was WWE, I think it's quite appropriate.
Sorry, just to that point of you wouldn't let a professional footballer play five-a-sides. My dad used to work with a friend of Alan Gow when he played for Rangers, and as anyone who watched Rangers at that time knew, Alan Gow was nowhere near that first team. So I don't think there were many complaints when he showed up to the playroom one night and played five-a-sides. Sitting there like, I've played five-a-sides with a professional footballer. It's not fun.
Yeah, like
I got the ball off him once, and I was that surprised that he took it back after me.
Yeah, so I said Jordan Devlin, Travis Banks, at the time recording, we don't know if they're going on, but you've got like some Mark Andrews, Flash Morgan Webster, like King of the Light, Kenny Williams, Joseph Conner, a lot of the women, Isla Dawn and all that.
Mark Coffey and Wolfgang are currently not in the card.
They'll likely accompany Joe Coffey to the ring, but they're not wrestling because they lost out to Mustache Mountain That's which what yep. Hell must have been get their spot in the card.
See, I would have preferred if it was, because we've seen the matches throughout, I'd have preferred if it was Gibson and Drake against Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster. For the simple fact that we know Gallus are going to be in the corner of Joe.
Yeah.
And I'd like to have seen British Strong Style altogether, because that is sort of what this rivalry's built around. It's mm-hmm. a case of we've been British wrestling for the past 10 years.
Uh-huh.
You know, British wrestling didn't start in 2017 at the Blackpool
Empress Ballroom.
Yeah, Empress Ballroom. Can remember, there have been that many places.
Just gotta remember us, you're gonna be there in a week.
I know.
Not gonna be wandering in Blackpool. Anyone seen the thing with?
I'm gonna show up to this road trip with like a t-shirt that says London, baby. Use it. Ross, you do know where we're going. Yeah, London!
Lucy's got an Angus Tippett sign, we need that sign for Ross right now. You know, he said, oh, we've also been teasing a thing with the. Fabian Knight and teaming now with Marcel Barthel and mm-hmm. against Andrews and Webster, and it's kind of assuming that they're going to cost them their spot in the upcoming match with Gibson and Drake. I don't know why they couldn't just like have Gallus and those two guys in like kind of a 14 fatal, as Tony Steele would probably call it.
14 fatal?
That'd be a historic first time ever.
Yes.
God's sake. I can't get away from that.
None of that to you. None of that. But yeah. And also Marcel and Payne Knight, when they got together, the commentators, could this be a start of a European Union? Like, oh god, because you made a more blatant reference here.
I'll
call them Team Brexit. Speaking of, like we talked about before, Johnny saying, like I said, he's like a confused granddad, which is probably why Sid Scales had to be put with him. And Ross said he's like the neighbour next door who's ball you kicked in his garden.
Yeah, he's obviously a legend in the British industry, and I think it's why they wanted to add them. But for adding someone like him, not many of the current like generation know who he is. Like mm-hmm. World of Sport had its heyday and ended originally in the mid-80s, I believe.
Well, to be fair,
early 80s.
Yeah, so. I'm not familiar with. I know his legend, but I've not seen any of his work.
He's sort of like the guys, obviously, when mm-hmm. people talk about British wrestling, they talk Rollerball Rocco, Kenzo Nakasaki, Big Daddy, Giant Haystacks. You know, all the mm-hmm. people, and he always gets mentioned as well. And they've thrown him into this role that he's not used to, and that's why I say I think Sid Scala, he's obviously an enhancement talent. He recently got injured. He's obviously very comfortable on the mic, and they've decided, right, we like you. Johnny Saint needs a bit of help. We have no plans to push you. Let's throw him together. I think Sid Scala's done quite well.
To be fair, you're absolutely right. He has really grasped the opportunity. JR talks about wrestlers maximising their minutes, mm-hmm. and Sid Scala's definitely mm-hmm. done that, and he is really good on the mic.
Yeah. I heard like from someone who was there that apparently when they did the unveiling of the title, he probably inadvertently kept interrupting Johnny Saint and got booed for it. But yeah, also, the funniest
thing. Because he does have an earpiece, he's probably been told. Listen, Johnny's flubbed his lines, like, could you maybe, like, divert attention away from it? And if he has to be the poor guy to make the legend look good, then...
Like, I think he's kind of... His is more understandable than when Kurt Angle came in and kept flubbing his lines when he was Roger.
Yeah. With Johnny Saint, we wonder going forward, maybe his role should be making proclamations behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So he can do pre-tapes.
Kind of like Rio Amigo. Yeah. And my favourite moment of Johnny Saint is where there was almost a confrontation between Gallus and Mustache Baron outside of Birmingham, I believe it was, Birmingham or Plymouth, and Johnny Saint's getting between them and like, right, out of here, off with you.
Right, off with
you. Like you try to chase some kids that are coming to his garden, away with you now, I know your mother.
Don't kick that football in my flabber bed again.
But anyway, I think we've talked enough about that, let's get into the actual matches that we will see there. Obviously, I don't think... Like a regular team, we'll have matches taped before for TV, but we might get some dark matches from some people. Let's get the one match that isn't for a title. It's a non-disqualification match, as Johnny Saint called it. It's Eddie Dennis versus Dave Mastiff, or Dave Mastiff, as David Hockney was called.
That French guy.
That Frenchman from the Black Country. Yeah, your thoughts on both these guys? They've kind of both been positioned as this like the two monsters that make the UK. And a few weeks back, Mastiff defeated Dennis, gave Dennis his fourth loss, but Dennis is still annoyed about that and is going after Dave Mastiff. And obviously, their recent match ended in a non-finish, and which is why we have this match. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on both these guys, Ross? I'll start with you.
I love Dave Mastiff. I think I knew of him. He's like a lot of these guys that came into NXT UK, like Ligero and Dave Mastiff. Dave Mastiff has came in and he's somebody I knew, but I'd never really seen much of. And I think his gimmick has been done very well. Like a lot of times, WWE bring in a big guy and it's just like straight away throw him to the title and when he doesn't win the title he sort of flounders until he gets given the fat guy likes to dance roll, you know, Brotus Clay, Rikishi.
For all we know, we haven't seen Dave Mastiff hands and he could be good, be the hip hop hippo like Albert.
Jesus Christ, oh, yeah, Ken Sai got a sweet, you get redubbed Sweet Tea, yeah, but Dave Mastiff I think has been really good. I did like the start of this rivalry. Obviously, he had a wee mini feud with Tyson T-Bone where Tyson T-Bone went, is that it? Is that all you've got for me? And as he's walking back up the ramp, the camera starts shaking like Jurassic Park.
I do love that presentation, like they see the feet and they're rumbling.
And Dave Mastiff starts walking to the ring. Mastiff's brilliant. He's actually who I've got to win this match. Eddie Dennis, on the other hand, I just think he's so wooden. His facial expressions just look like a sort of corny, made-for-TV's horror movie villain.
Yeah.
Look, was there not a drama class in that school he taught in? Like, Dave Mastiff is like a bulky big man, you know what I mean? And he throws his weight around, whereas Eddie Dennis, it just looks lanky.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's believable. I do like the whole presentation of when he interrupted Mastiff saying, excuse me, they want to talk to the monster of the brand. That's actually me. I thought that was good. Mm-hmm. That's his only convincing bit. I think his facial expressions and his promo skills, bar the sit down interviews, which were great.
Yeah.
I don't see much there, and I can see Mastiff squashing him and then just leading to a new feud.
Those pre-tapes that you said at the start kind of hint that there's future plans for Ennis, but I said to you, the way he scrunches his face up when he comes out, like, as if he's been told, right, look mean. Like a child act.
Yeah, I think he might be possibly outside of the ring one of the nicest guys in the world.
I'm sure he is.
It's just like one of those ones that's not that, like, you hear heels themselves talk about, like, I just try to be the biggest asshole I can be when I'm being a heel, and I think Eddie Dennis is just one of those naturally nice people that can't be mean.
I think you're right, Ross, about Mastiff. I think he's been really well positioned in this, and he was on the first episode, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He squashy or nearly killed Sid Scala, didn't he?
Yeah, I think Nigel really well said what Scala weighed is probably as much as the Mastiff had for breakfast.
Yeah. So Mastiff has been really well positioned. He's had matches against Sid Scala, Dan Maloney, Tyson T-Bone, the Wild Boar, and Eddie Dennis. Now, so he's had a fair amount of TV time in amongst this, and I think the evolution of the character's been quite good, because he didn't get the greatest spotlight at the Royal Albert Hall. He got eliminated in what would have been the second round, but the first round on the night by Joe Coffey in an excellent match. I thought I really enjoyed that one. The evolution of the character, so he's now the Bomber, Dave Mastiff, you've got that sort of earthquake entrance. He looks different now with the Vader-esque
Love the Vader
wears as well. And did you notice when he was cutting his promo just before Dennis interrupted him a couple of weeks ago, he was about to challenge Pete Dunne, and the crowd, I thought, really popped for it.
Yeah.
So I think the future looks bright for the big French guy.
Yeah, because he also said as well, the original promo that started this feud, which I thought was really good, he went, well, what is left when you're a monster that's destroyed all the competition? The NXT title, and I'll get into it later on. I actually have Joe winning the title, and I think his first feud will be with Mastiff.
And I do think that's a good title, or at least like kind of a first defence before a rematch, obviously down the line with Pete. But yeah, and I think this kind of seems to be kind of an unofficial number one contenders match, where like they have them on NXT all the time, where you have the title match. And you've also got these two guys in the middle of the card who could easily challenge for the belt, and you can tell that the winner is also kind of the next big show going to challenge for the belt. I see that being here. Can you disagree? Or?
No, it's kind of like the Black Gargano situation. Black's the number one contender at TakeOver.
Yeah.
The TakeOver before, which we watched at Dave's House Party 2, Electric Boogaloo, the birth of the pigs and blankets chant. We watched that, obviously. Alistair Black defeated Gargano then, and that's sort of led to the title match of the US TakeOver, so I think you're in my shout.
So do we have Mastiff winning this, or?
I do, yes.
Chris?
Yeah, Eddie Dennis I think will continue to squash lower card guys, and then I think he'll be put into the Cassius Ohno sort of role, where he'll beat so many people, and then the shiny new toy, as Cassius Ohno calls it, takes out Yeah,
part of the reason I went for Mastiff in this is thinking through who needs to win more. Mm-hmm. I think that you could make a case to say that Dennis needs to win, but what does that do in terms of advancement of TV and what do you do next with him? Whereas Mastiff, if he loses, does that hurt him? Arguably yes, arguably no. But if he's going to then go on to challenge for the title, you want him being hot for that. And yeah. And if we're going to have a heel champion, he needs a babyface to go up against.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I'm hoping, like, down the lane, Eddie Dennis from this goes on to face feud with either Dunn or Mark Andrews, because they're the guys he specifically mentioned in his opening vignettes. Like, mm-hmm. He had to sit at home while they were starting this UK brand.
Andrews would be a good one because he can play that part that you were alluding to, Ross, of being the sort of bully, you know, the big bully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think as well, whoever wins the tag title match, I could maybe see their first defence being against Webster and Andrews.
Yeah.
And maybe Eddie Dennis costing them that, like, you know, I'll cost you your dreams because you took mine, you know, you went ahead and got in the first UK tournament.
I remember, like, it's Andrews and Dennis have had their feud in progress. And like Dennis, we got really personally, like, you use everybody, you use me to get over in progress, you use your mum and dad for free rent, and you use wrestling to get over your shitty band. The band that seems to be nudging against the Fear Band because you can't stop fucking mentioning them.
Oh, every single time. That's Junior with Fall to Pieces. Mark Andrews is actually in that band. My God, do you get a plug every time you mention that song?
He's in commission.
And I think he did mention their new album at one of the Horror Award, was easiest $20 ever made though.
No, it's like R. Kelly every time he steals I'll Be Watching You. what's his face? Sting. How do I not remember a singer named after a pissing wrestler on a wrestling podcast? Sting goes ka-ching.
And that down, R. Kelly and Sting, both versions. But yeah, speaking of, we talked about Chance earlier. Somebody who's had some very dread creative chants thrown at them, Zach Gibson, who will be teaming with James Drake, the Grizzled Young Veterans. They're not called
Grizzled
that
Young Veterans!
Sorry,
say
guys,
it right.
Guys, we need to take our shoes off when we talk about it.
Make sure you're easily removable shoes on TakeOver. Yeah, the Grizzled Young Veterans are not called that now, but they should be against Mustache Mountain to crown the first ever NXT UK Tag Team Champions. Let's first talk about Gibson as a heel so far. It's just been unbelievable since the UK tournament.
Amazing. I like him so much on TV, and yet whenever I see him in person, much like ICW Fear and Loathing, or like we're going to see in Blackpool, you just can't help but... It's a natural reaction just to boom. Because I think he takes, like, the... Not to disparage anybody for Liverpool, but he does play up the Liverpudlian accent, and he ramps it right up, much like Joe Coffey, like we'll talk about later. He ramps up his Glasgow accent every time the crowd chants "We don't understand you." Mm-hmm. He starts going "Aye, Gallus, Gallus." He ramps up the Liverpudlian accent, and when you hear him normally talk, he's got such a normal toned voice, but he makes it so squeaky and so annoying. And I don't think, like, we talked about it on our look back show of the 2017 UK tournament and our look ahead to the 2018 one, that we did not see anyone bar Zach Gibson winning that tournament.
Because by then Dunn had kind of transitioned to a face by that point, so you need a good heel for him to go up against. Like you said earlier, if you're going to have a heel champion, a face for him to go up against, and Gibson fit that role perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think this promo got aired on the network, but after Gibson won the tournament at the Royal Albert Hall, he cut a promo and it took him ages to finish it because the boos in the building, it was Ciampa style.
Nice.
He was getting booed out the building. It was amazing, and he lapped it up and delivered it. He's amazing in what he does. I've got a bit of a controversial statement to make now, in that I think he's wasted in the tag division. I think he's a top tier talent.
I think he's only in the tag division at the minute because they have positioned him to such a high standard that they can't not have him on the first takeover. They put all that effort. Obviously they weren't ready to take the title off Dunn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that with progress and with his team with James Drake being so popular in the British independent scene, they needed someone popular to go someone popular as heels, I should say, to go up against the megastars which have now became in Mustache Mountain. And I think he will float about. However, James Drake is He's a gorgeous man compared to Zach Gibson's.
Arseface,
yes,
as the crowd have
called him. Yes, Arseface. Never has a more beautiful man be called such a disparaging name, Arseface. But he has a likability about him as well that doesn't transition well when he's teamed with Gibson. So, like you said, I think I can. They're my picks to win it. But I can see when they eventually lose the titles, is Gibson turning on James Drake for Gibson to go back into the main roster in the singles division.
How about Drake being good looking? Where does he rank on the Nathan Fisher scale of handsomeness?
He's certainly built better than Nathan, but I mean, me and Gary only have eyes for Nathan, I think. The truly handsomest man.
The leader of the Handsome Man's Club.
Yeah, leader of the Handsome Man's Club at ESSR.
And now we just wish Nathan was here. May not have a lot to add, but he used to get lost in his eyes. Well, so you're talking about, when you're talking about creating the first ever NXT Tag Team, UK Tag Team Champions, Mustache Bouton were also going to be one of those teams, because since the beginning they've been a part of the brand, being the first UK champion, they've kind of been NXT UK's first real team for a while, because at the start there was them and there were a lot of other like kind of thrown together teams, and now Gibson and Drake have came up and they've backed by that heel heat for Gibson. So, I'm going to say, who do you think needs to win this more? Who do you think is more deserving of being the first ever tag team champions?
I think Gibson and Drake need it more, because we always talk about, and we even talked about it on our Glow special. I'm plugging every show tonight. I'm going to try to get every show in here somehow. We plugged it on our Glow season one review show that it's the chase that makes it. It's the chase, it's the run to the title, it's trying to beat the big bad.
What does a game show have to do with anything?
And I think Gibson and Drake winning, it puts Drake on a par with Gibson, because in WWE's eyes at the minute, Gibson has the money. It gives them a storyline moving forward. It gives Mustache Mountain something to chase. It also gives the likeable teams of Amir Jordan, Kenny Williams and Flash Morgan Webster and Mark Andrews something to chase. And obviously, like we said, I think in WWE they're only team together temporarily.
Yeah.
So I can see this leading to a James Drake, Zach Gibson feud maybe about 6 months down the line. So I think they're my pick, and I think Gibson and Drake do need to win.
And they are kind of polar opposites, whereas Drake's more the silent type. I mean, whether or not that's by choice, because Gibson's such a good talker, but he's good in the ring and he doesn't really need to talk. He's got Gibson to do all that for him.
Yeah, it's my pick for the match. I'm going to split the vote here, because I'm going to go for Mustache Mountain. I've got my Mustache Mountain t-shirt. Well, I think this is a case, I'm going to say this again when we come on to talk about the women's title, I think the title needs Mustache Mountain more than Mustache Mountain need the titles, I think, to give it some credibility. Because it's a new title and it's not, you know, first time ever. I think Mustache Mountain deserve to be the first ever NXT UK Tag Champions, and I think they'll help enhance the belts.
I have to say, we talked about obviously first time ever champions. I think a lot of the times WWE do these things for people to like hang their hat on. Like, they hang Tyler Bates' hat on the fact that he's the youngest singles champion in WWE, and he's the first ever UK champion. Trent Seven's got the fact that he's an NXT US, that is, tag champ. And I think Zach Gibson and James Drake, well, Zach Gibson has the UK Championship Tournament 2018 winner behind his hat on. James Drake doesn't have a lot to like brag about in WWE terms, that is. So I think they need to win more, just so it's like from then on out, it's much like, although he's much better than both of them, it's like the Heath Slater Rhino sort of thing. Like, they were the first ever tag team champions over on SmackDown. It's something they can constantly bring up when James Drake is either in a position to win a title, or even if he's just being brought out to put someone over.
Before I get into who I think is going to win, what do you think of the tag team titles themselves? Because the women's one kind of looks like a variation on the women's titles we see on the main roster, and the main UK title looks like someone would see like in the style of the World or Universal title, just put that different nameplate on. But these are something completely different. They kind of looks to me like something you'd see at Progress.
Yeah, but there was the the bit of the botch. You'll not see this on Botch Club right enough, because it was WWE's own mistake. It was the fact that they first designed these titles and it said NXT UK Tag Titles, and the UK covered up the actual UK part of the globe.
That is a bit of a mistake. Not particularly view on the titles, but just on the tag team landscape in NXT UK, because there's some bloody random teams in there. There does need to be some proper teams brought together.
You got Huxley and Tebow, aka the Mad Bastards. But yeah, I also the vote split, and I'm actually going to go with Gibson and Drake, because I think having them again, like you said, tying the hat on being the first ever tag champ, but also then them taking that heat they've already got and kind of can see how much further they can take it with having a decent length reign with the belts, and then you can have that pop either the next takeover even further down the line when someone eventually takes the titles off them, whoever that is, once they've hopefully built some more teams up.
Yeah, because can you imagine like in Glasgow with maybe Gallus beating them for the titles, or maybe like if they went to Birmingham, Mustache Mountain would probably get a pop anywhere, but you know, their hometown, them winning it, you know, I think, plus Zach Gibson's promos when he, like, soon to be recognised as the first ever NXT UK Tag Champions, you know, and I compare him to a Kevin Owens style heel, where he brags about it, but when it comes to it, he can beat you within the rules completely by the book, and I think that's something good as well, because he always goes, I told you I was coming to WWE, I did it. I told you I was going to win the UK tournament, I did it. I told you I was going to win the tag titles, I did it. It's a third thing, and he can keep adding.
Yeah,
keep adding,
absolutely. Keep adding. That really wraps up the heat, and obviously gets people more angry, and gets the boos get louder, and more shoes go off. And onto our next championship match, it's Toni Storm challenging Rhea Ripley for the NXT UK Women's Championship, with this being a rematch of the finals of the crown the first champion, which happened in Birmingham, with Rhea also coming out on top. What are your thoughts on Rhea kind of being the first UK champion, female UK champion?
Wouldn't have been my choice. Yeah. Would not have been my choice.
Because even we bring up on commentary about Toni Storm and her connection to the UK scene.
Yeah.
So that seems to be like the obvious choice to a lot of people, but then it kind of came out of nowhere with Rhea Ripley, because she'd previously only been seen on the Mayhem Classic.
Yeah. And she looks, you know, when you see her, especially against the NXT UK ladies, she seems enormous beside them in terms of her physique.
5'9"
as well.
Former football, soccer for our American listeners, former footballer in Australia. Yeah, she wouldn't have been my choice, much like Gary, but I think they knew they were going to go all in with Toni Storm winning the Mae Young Classic, because these things are obviously decided as soon as they book these tournaments. She was going to win it. I think she will win in Blackpool. However, the fact that Rhea Ripley wasn't just another face in the crowd, like, you know, the NXT title itself, the first tournament, Seth Rollins was always going to win that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he beats Jinder Mahal in the final. Obviously, he did win the WWE title about 10 years later, but, you know, he didn't do much after that.
This didn't have to last that few years later, though.
Yeah, this is the sort of thing where the tournament winner was the one that needed it the most. Toni Storm, much again, the money is in the chase.
Yeah.
She wins the Mae Young Classic. The fact that it aired after the Mae Young Classic makes Rhea Ripley look even better. She didn't do it by fluke. She won clean as a whistle.
Yeah.
She took Toni Storm out. And then it works in her favour. So even if she loses here, it's like, well, actually, you've beat me, I've beat you. You know, we need a rubber match to see who the best person is.
Yeah.
And much like we said earlier, with James Drake having something to hang his hat on, Rhea Ripley now has the I was the first ever historic women's NXT champion.
Yeah. The role that, or the spot that Rhea Ripley currently has, is a spot that I more envisioned Ginny playing to start with.
Yeah.
So somebody from the UK scene that had been positioned, so the audience were primed for her to be the leading heel of the division, and the first person to go up against Toni for the title. So I was a wee bit surprised for that reason. I don't know if it was just me assuming that the person that eventually became the champion for that division would be from at least working within the UK, not
Xenophobe.
Somebody that was not somebody.
Why don't you just yell Brexit means Brexit, Gary?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I kind of feel like when the appearances we've seen from Jenny since that tournament, the Women's Championship tournament, it kind of feels like Ripley is in the spot that she's most comfortable playing, and I don't think they've gotten around to setting up like secondary stories for the women's division yet, so she's kind of had to float about. And the thing is with Ripley, she's had two successful defences since then against Isla Dawn in Plymouth and Deonna Purrazzo in Liverpool. Like you said, she's taller than other people, so she can kind of ragdoll people around. She looks more dominant, especially when she does that kind of reverse clover leaf submission that kind of looks like you'll get a lot of the women are quite physical, so it looks like they're properly being bent. So it's like, usually I'd say it's kind of too early to take the belt off her, but then again, Storm is clearly in for a big push because she's a clear part of this brand and she won the Mae Young Classic. So it's kind of, I'm kind of divided on who to go for.
Yeah, I think on a lot of the promotional posters for the next taping, don't know if it's telling, I don't know if it's just these were done months in advance, but the Coffees and James Drake aren't on the poster and Rhea Ripley isn't on the poster, so there's three people that are in title matches that aren't on the promotional material.
Yeah, it's another thing, like, if Gibson and Drake win the tag titles and if Coffey takes up, goes away with the UK title, it's kind of a weird thing, like, is it right to have all of your champions all be heels? Because, like, although it can be said heel champions are usually more entertaining than heel than face champions because of the chase and all that.
Yeah, you wouldn't normally expect to see, if you've got three titles, to see them all around the waist of heels in that ways. I would also, normally I would agree with you, Scott, with the statement you made, to say it is too soon to take the title off somebody. Normally I would say yes to that, but in this case I'm saying no, it won't be, because I think Toni Storm should be the person that's leading this new division forward. And we've seen NXT UK a couple of times now, so for the first batch of tapings, Noam Dar was brought in, did two matches, not seen him since.
Yeah, no, it's kind of weird why Kevin Danny Burch haven't been back, why Jack Gallagher hasn't been made a part of this.
Yeah, Danny Burch came in for the second lot of tapings, did two matches, he's away. And for the third batch of tapings, I think it was the third batch, we had Deonna come across and do great matches, I thought. I really enjoyed her match with Ripley. So whilst Ripley has been been a consistent presence, I don't see her being like a full-time player here. I think we can see more of her. I would expect to see more of her time spent in the US.
Yeah, I think she might go to the main one, but I think you'd say the same thing about Toni Storm, obviously, the time they've put into her. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ripley retain and maybe keep the chase going, maybe retains by nefarious means, and it maybe gives... I was reading online that the tapings themselves, they are, while they are well attended, they aren't sellouts a lot of the time. So I think maybe at the next set of tapings, you could maybe have the likes of Toni Storm beat her then.
Yeah.
And it stops, like you said, three heel champions, and at the same time gives the sort of aura, like what the WWE love to brag about, anything can happen in the WWE.
Yeah, well, it seemed like I said too soon. It also seemed too soon to take the UK belt off of Tyler Bate, but...
We've got somebody's just gate-crashed, Scott, to give us a view
kind of run-in.
a view on who's going to win between Rhea Ripley and Toni Storm. So Lucy is with us, our youngest podcaster. So Lucy, who's your pick, Toni Storm or Rhea Ripley?
Toni Storm.
Toni Storm.
Why do you think Toni's coming away with from Blackpool with the belt?
Because after she won the Mae Young Classic, and then she got beat by Rhea Ripley, so I think that now she's came back and she's fired up, so she's going to win it.
That's a good point. Lovely.
Are you looking forward to going to Blackpool?
Yeah.
You buzzing to be stuck in a car with me, Sarah and Scott? No, I was waiting on a no. I think you're the only one, isn't it? We're stuck in the car with the three of us because Gary's not looking forward to it.
Oh, she clearly has better manners than her father.
Yes, this is why Lucy is the favourite Kernahan and Stevenson on the podcast.
The reason I'm ready because I'm going to hold up my sign the whole drive pointing to Dad.
What, saying I'm most stupid?
Yeah.
Well, I'm in the front seat, so make sure it's pointing the right way, you know what I mean? So...
Well, Ross doesn't seem to know where the venue is, so you might need to point it at him.
Don't let Scott or Sarah hold it, as they will point it at me like, look, hey, stupid.
Are you sure about that?
Thanks, Lucy.
No, like the tone here.
So, Lucy, for Toni Storm, Ross, you said Rhea Ripley?
I said Rhea Ripley retaining and to bring people in for the tapings, Toni Storm running at the next set of tapings.
I've got Toni Storm mailing the premises that I said earlier that a bit... Not having three heel champions, I thought maybe I have Toni get revenge after the main classic thing, then maybe it's Toni's time to take the belt. Gary?
Toni Storm's my pick. I think she's a superstar and I can see her being the leader of this division for a period of time.
Yeah, so we've got
sorry, that was our special guest, Lucy, leaving there.
Master of subtleties, listen. So it's 3-1 in favour of Tony Storm, and when I said it was Tony Storm's time, because I couldn't think of anything else saying, I had that stupid catchphrase they've had her say on TV, that Tony time, like, my God, is it, can you feel anything be more ungenuine than that? Anything more of a catchphrase that Dewey's clearly, like, shoving to put on t-shirts or something like that?
Yeah, it's a very, it's a very Tony the Tiger style.
But you say that,
I'm great.
I was so frustrated I couldn't get formulate words to describe why I didn't like it.
You say it's a poor catchphrase, but I know that when you're going to be in the car coming back from Blackpool wearing a Tony time t-shirt.
Oh yes, absolutely. Did I not tell you it's Tony time? I've always loved that catchphrase.
Mainly probably because I'd be so happy if she won. So like I said, 3-1 to move on that one. But move on to our main event, which is the leader of Kells, Joe Coffey, challenging Pete Dunne for the WWE UK Championship. That's what I say. Why is this still called the WWE UK Championship and the other belts are called the NXT UK Women's and Tag Belts?
Yeah, I think it's maybe, they maybe think moving it from WWE to NXT would be a sort of, not a demotion, but it seems less than, because obviously NXT is looked at as a developmental brand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, you talked about how much a part of NXT UK Gals would be. Like, it started at the UK tournament when Joe and Mark did a run-in and beat up some of the guys like Travis Banks and Mark Andrews, and then the first 30 minutes both guys joined, and they've kind of been a, you know, been the dominant heels of the brand ever since. And it's always felt like Joe and Pete were always going to collide. It was a matter of when, not if, especially after Gibson was beaten by Dunne.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised. Like I mentioned earlier, I've rattled through about 18, 19 episodes of NXT the past few days, and I've been skipping a lot of the entrances just to like make up time.
Yeah.
And when the Gallus theme song hit the other day, I was sitting there going, why are they using Mark Coffey's ICW theme song?
It's a brilliant tune.
It is an amazing tune, because the original sort of Joe Coffey theme song they had, it wasn't like his good one in ICW, it was just sort of there. It's one of those low sounding ones that, like, when the crowd go over it, you actually can't hear the song.
Yeah.
I mean, for all we can say about Mark Andrews and the constant mention of his band, at least he's got a proper song, and that's something that kind of seems generically a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is a good song to have, and I think the fact that you see it in the promo video for the Titantron video, when Mark Coffey enters an ICW, it's like the soldiers walking to war.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like, they're defending their right to claim British wrestling as their own. I think that's a really good boom.
Yeah, their kingdom, boom, as they like to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk about Pete Dunne as champion, the longest reigning singles champion of the modern era, surpassed Brock Lesnar, surpassed Asuka, and also he kind of makes Tyler Bate, whose reign is like 125 days, which doesn't seem that bad, but it makes it seem like Kane's one day reign by comparison to his.
He managed to get Kane in there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just right before the hour mark, squeeze a Kane reference in.
It's the new you're talking to, Ross. I don't
I'm
mess about
sure he's got that in his notes. 1 hour. Get Kane reference.
Kane.
I told you not to look at my notes. Yeah, so he's had it for quite a while, and it kind of feels like if it's not now, on the first ever takeover, because you know, at that moment you could walk away from, like, what do you remember from the first takeover? It was the night Pete Dunne's reign finally ended.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like WrestleMania is always that one moment you walk away from, like, Taker's streak ending finally at Mania. That's what everyone remembers that for, kind of more so than Bryan's thing.
Yeah.
But if not, Coffey, like, is there anyone left that can take it?
Well, later on, we were going to finish up the talk about predictions, so one of my predictions is that we might see Walter's debut, and his debut might be to attack the Pete Dunne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can actually see Joe Coffey winning it here.
He's my pick to win it.
Yeah, but like you said, 500 days as champion. A lot of people, myself and Alan Lucas, off-air earlier on today, were actually talking about Pete Dunne's reign.
Yeah.
And I defended it by saying, like, obviously this is NXT UK, much like NXT itself, you know, the main roster title in NXT was only defended 7 times last year on television. And since he won the title in May 2017, so in the space of just under 18 months, this will be his 13th title defence, which on main roster looks sort of, God, part-time champion, but compared to the likes of New Japan, Ring of Honor, NXT itself, it is a title defence on average every 6 to 7 weeks. And I think he's done well with it. Obviously, there is he is defending it on the indies, and a point Alan did make, which I did agree with, if he was defending it in the likes of ICW, Progress, OTT, you knew he wasn't going to lose it there, because it's WWE's belt, they want the title change. But I think he's been a great champion. I think he's been a fighting champion. But like Scott says, the moment you walk away from, and the fact that it's live, it's not taped, you know.
Yeah.
If he had lost that title in Cambridge,
yeah,
by the time it aired, no one would have cared.
That's one of the things, sorry, yeah, damn it, but okay. The thing that kind of took me out a wee bit from his title defences in Cambridge and in Birmingham, like especially the Birmingham one against Devlin, that was a fantastic match and they were good, but because you knew how long ago they were taped, you knew there was no way Dunn wasn't walking out with the belt.
Yeah,
that's so. That was before we moved to Gary, that was one point as well. I met to Alan, you know, three title defences in the space of 11 shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's never been done on the likes of NXT before.
You've got to remember, with the NXT UK, it really came about in the summer. So we had Royal Albert Hall, where he defended the title against Gibson. First match of tapings, he defends the title against Noam Dar, and then goes on to defend against Danny Burch and Jordan Devlin. So for a promotion that's only been going, and has had essentially four batches of shows, he's had one title defence then, and we'll have another one, pair one, and we'll have another one against Joe next week, or sorry, this week. So I think that's a decent, you know, the champion is there, he's on the shows, he's there, he's defending his title, and it's just that his title run has just predated the existence of a weekly vehicle for him to be present on.
In comparison to Brock Lesnar, where they like to see Brock Lesnar being the attraction when the champ, when he shows up with a belt, it's a moment to remember, but he's only usually just stands there and he rarely does defend the belt, whereas when Pete Dunne shows up in the rare appearances he does defend it, so his appearances feel more of a video because, like, Dunn's coming and he's defending the belt, so we're going to have a cracking main event.
Yeah, he obviously in NXT, the original NXT, he's defended it against Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, Wolfgang. I believe he defended it once again against Pete Dunne. I can't remember.
Defending against himself?
Sorry, Ricochet. Against Ricochet, yeah. I defended it against Tyler Bate, was the one I meant to say before Scott made me look like an arse.
Well, he's that good, he probably could fight himself. Yeah,
he could have a match himself, we'd watch it. He's also had North American title matches. He's had champion versus champion non-title matches when he appeared on Raw and 205 Live against Enzo Amore, who was Cruiserweight champion at the time.
He's been in War Games as well.
He was in War Games, he is a mega star, and I think his reign's been amazing, and while his gimmick at the minute is that you can't get the title off him because he's so good, I think if Joe wins it, one, it'll make Joe a megastar in the eyes of the casual fans because he's the guy that ended Pete Dunne's, you know, over 500 day reign. But also his gimmick will be he's hard to get the title off, but not because he's so good, which is amazing. It's because Gallus are there and Gallus will always have his back, and I think that could lead to what we mentioned, Walter.
Mm-hmm.
That makes Walter look all the better if he debuts, as I believe, and then goes on to beat Joe for the title.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say about Joe, how we said earlier on about people taking their opportunities and running with it, and Joe Coffey's definitely done that. He has pleasantly surprised me about how good he has been in this role.
Mm-hmm.
He's been really, I think the Gallus faction has been really entertaining, although the Wolfgang heel turn caused tears in my household. Lucy was gutted that her hero, who she has a signed picture from, was now a bad guy.
Did the reckless intent legend that is Michael Chase, the signed picture I won of him, not make it up to her? No,
it is there at pride of place in her bedroom, but not as front and centre as Wolfgang was. But that group have been really good. I actually thought one of the reasons I say pleasantly surprised about Joe's role is it was a role I didn't see him in at this point. Mm-hmm. I seen him win it eventually. Mm-hmm. I thought the Coffey brothers were being brought on to be a tag team.
Yeah. Seemed that way at first.
Yeah, and then so I assumed that they'd be, you know, sort of chasing the tag titles to begin with. But the Gallus faction, I think, has been really entertaining. I've really enjoyed how it's gone, and I think these guys will have a great match on Saturday.
Something as well, I've not been the biggest fan of Joe Coffey in ICW.
Yeah, me neither.
Because when I started going regular to ICW shows, he was in his hiatus after losing the world title to BT Gunn. He returns at Baromania. We set up the match for Shugs, and then unfortunately with the first set of tapings, we don't get to see that match. Mm-hmm. So he was just sort of there at times, and obviously with being in the Rudo faction, he always had Rudo talking for him or putting across his point. So I never seen much for Joe Coffey, and I'd never seen him on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I, for obviously months, I've been saying, I don't like Joe Coffey, I don't like Joe Coffey. Mm-hmm. And then obviously seeing him in a weekly vehicle as a heel, seeing how good he can be, and then seeing, what, like you said, pleasantly surprised. Like, honestly, whenever I think someone's not as good as people make them out to be, or if I don't find them as good as they're rated to be,
yeah,
you're always pleasantly surprised, because why, you don't want to watch bad wrestling, you're always pleasantly surprised to be proved wrong. And Joe Coffey, it might be news to me, but it's not news to the majority of British wrestling fans.
And before Joe turned heel in ICW and joined up with Riddle, he had this sort of, just for, because you guys probably didn't see it as much, played this Iron Man character, which was hugely popular, and had some amazing matches. He had some great matches with Jack Gallagher in particular.
I watched that on demand the other day.
It's well worth, the first one they have is well worth going to. They did a second one with an Iron Man match at a Square Go.
That's the one I watched,
but the one before that, Scott's even better. So that's why I know he'll have a great match, because also he's got a great opponent to go up against, Pete Dunne.
Yeah, and Coffey said on the recent contract signing in Liverpool, he said the only reason you've had that belt for so long is because I wasn't here. Which is a good point to make, and that he might prove himself right. He can back up what he says if he was going to win, and I don't think you need to worry about either guy if they lose, because they are clearly guys that people, like Triple H and, or at least people higher up, do like, because you both look at them like, these look like Triple H guys, because if Dunne loses, he'll probably then slowly transition to the main NXT, because I do think he's kind of outgrowing this, so I think it's kind of his time to slowly fade up. And maybe he made the occasional appearance because he'll get that big pop, because no matter where he goes, he gets a big pop. And Coffey, I don't think, can look that bad if he loses, though I do think he is going to win, and because he does seem like a Triple H guy, and Triple H is very much behind this brand, and for now I think Coffey's going to be his guy to carry it for a while.
I mean, you make a good point, Scott, because one of the reasons WWE is doing this is, yes, to put on a good product here in the UK, but it's to develop a batch of stars, and a metric of success should be that they develop talent that go on to eventually appear in Raw and SmackDown on a weekly basis. So Dunne was one of the guys that featured in that all-star 10-man tag match that they had at Madison Square Garden over Christmas. So if he's been selected to be part of that, that's a big signal of the value WWE places
him. Because not just any other arena, it's WWE's mecca, like Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, he's in there with, you know, like Undisputed Era. Quite clearly, other people Triple H have put a lot of time into. They only lose, they're the classic heels, they only lose when the odds are fair. You know, Ciampa and Gargano, two megastars who have had Feud of the Year this year, were in that match. It was, you had the Velveteen Dream, you had Aleister Black, you had
Matt Riddle,
you had Ricochet, who was the North American champion. So he's on. It's not like in WWE where at times when the brand split wasn't a thing, you had maybe one guy as a US champion, like John Cena was US champion, it was up here, whereas Ryback's IC title was down here.
Yeah.
It's not that way in NXT. It's not a, oh well, you're the champ of the other brand. No, it's when you come over, you're on a par with your guy.
Yeah, and like you can just put a picture of the guys in this match, you put a Triple H's boys. And I think, like you said, this team, like Coffey, when he first came, was going to be in a tag team with Mark. And if they had stuck as a tag team and not joined Wolfgang, I could easily have seen them becoming the first tag team champions. But obviously, as it stands, they're not. And I think Coffey is going to walk away with this. Would you agree?
Yeah.
I can see him winning by a mile.
I think so. It's, if you're going to change the title, if you're going to end Pete Dunne's reign, when do you end it?
Yeah.
It has to be live.
It's got to be live. And if you want to lay down a marker, the first ever NXT UK takeover show.
Yeah.
You know, this, you know, it would be I'm trying to avoid using the word historic, but I can't think of a better one to do it. It would be
monumental.
Oh, now you give me that hint.
Monumental! Doesn't he have the same ring as you? You start yelling it, does it?
Yeah.
No, I actually think this could be another way to make, obviously, Joe Coffey a megastar, because they were mentioning how they were British wrestling. You know, Joe Coffey's been doing this for 10 plus years, Wolfgang's been doing it for 10 plus years, same with Mark Coffey. I believe if they truly want to make megastars, the likes of Mustache Mountain or even Mark Andrews, who had a large US following throughout his time in TNA and on the indies there, I think you could maybe see the rematch for this at the US NXT we keep calling it US NXT, NXT
it's hard, original. It's hard to tell what it, if you say normal NXT, it sounds like there's something wrong with NXT UK.
It's you could maybe have the rematch at the WrestleMania weekend NXT TakeOver, maybe do a Fatal 4-Way, maybe add some other people in just to get names on that card, because one, it makes that card a lot more attractive, and two, it makes your UK brand seem as important. Mm-hmm. Like, we like them that much that we're bringing them over for this. Because yeah. I feel Dunn and Joe would be wasted just filling access matches.
Mm. Yeah, so I think it seems unanimous that we think Joe Coffey's going to win. I want to take some 5 minutes of potential surprise. We've already talked about Walter making his debut. He's heavily linked up about being a part of the European expansion because mm-hmm. he said previously he wouldn't go to NXT when he was right off, because he was off the contract kind of around the same time Keith Lee was, and Keith Lee also took it, but he didn't want to move to the US and move to Florida like all the other guys have to. But if he's part of the European, imagine he's known in the UK, he's also comfortable coming out of the UK and may expand into Europe and Austria regularly, so he wouldn't have to go far too often. So also, it does seem like a good fit for him. Like, but do we like we usually do NXT takeovers where they appear in the crowd, or can you see him coming out and confronting somebody?
I can see him Samoa Joe style.
Yeah.
I was going to say Adam Cole, but I was more a bit sneaky heel attack. I can see Coffee and the Gallus Boys, which sounds like a band for the 60s. Coffee and the Gallus Boys. You can see them attacking Pete Dunne after the match, you know, insult to injury sort of thing. And then much like Samoa Joe did when Owens was attacking Sami Zayn, uh-huh. you have Walter come out and they head for the hills. You don't give away the confrontation or the physicality straight away. Mm-hmm. You just have Walter, maybe have him rough up Mark and Wolfgang,
yeah.
but Joe escapes, you know. And then you've also got Walter, who has a massive following, but you've also got Joe, the heel, with something else to moan about. Like, you took my moment, that was my moment, that wasn't your moment.
And plus, if he came out, he's a face, he'll get a big reaction. And the show will end on a high, because it does seem like if a heel wins the title in the main event, it feels like the show's ended on a bit of a downer. Mm-hmm. But I like that idea, but I also kind of like the idea of him coming out if he confronts Dave Masters at the end of his match, because Dave Masters says, I like guys who are my size, who hit hard as hard as me, because he wants evenly matched opponents.
Mastiff. Oh, you mean Mastiff? Yes, Dave Hawkins.
That classic rivalry, France versus Austria.
Yes.
But yeah, he comes out and he squares off him, and, like, and we build to this next big man beat by him, the next takeover. I'm hoping for that moment, his first match on NXT UK TV, where a jobber like squares up to him on one side of the ring, Rodgers goes to him and chops him to the other side of the ring, just fuck off.
I think obviously he's a heel at the minute, but going up against the Coffees, who are established heels, and Wolfgang, they could easily change this. Marcel Barthel, who is Walter's tag partner, is WXW,
he was Alex Teaser Jr., part of Ring Camp, along with Timothy Thatcher.
So he's there, Fabian Aichner's there, who is, by the way, he is an amazing talent.
Yeah, definitely.
I absolutely love him. I'm glad that they took him out of NXT US, because he's been wasted there.
Definitely.
But, yeah, have the three of them maybe go up against Gallus, that's his backup, even though he doesn't need it.
Yeah.
You could still have, you know, the dark match of the next takeover, uh-huh. Coffee and Wolfgang against Barset and Aichner, and then leading to the title match itself.
I do definitely see that if he's going to come in, if he's going to be a part of the team, they two be perfect fits for him.
Mm-hmm.
Really, yeah, and I'm really hoping to see Walter, because we've seen him at Shug's House Party Night 1 against BT, and it was a great match.
Chop fist.
Yeah. All you need to do, if you don't know him, is go on YouTube and say Walter Chops.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Not for the faint of heart, really, is it?
No, he messed up a fair few people's chests this year.
Yeah.
Did he not cave in somebody's rib cage at one point?
I have no idea. I do remember seeing a wrestler put on Twitter a picture of his chest after Walter was done with him. He's all bruised and purple and all that.
Like, Jesus Christ.
Hope no one's eating during this. Like we are.
How does that, like, I spoke to Scott the other day about Joe Coffey's finisher, all the best for the bells, you know, using a classic Scottish saying. Could we maybe have BT Gunn start chopping people and just call it Hell Slap It Into You?
We talked about kind of the original, like, the total elimination, like what they appeared there with some sweet sliding or kicks out one being up there for thinking, down there for dancing.
This is why I need to go to work or college. That these past few days, all I've spent doing is watching wrestling and thinking about utter shite.
Yeah. Also, Coffee always seems to cry when somebody ducks that move. Maybe it's because you shout a full sentence before you hit the move, because you feel you need to shout the name of the move before he hits it.
Yeah, I think it is why they were. I loved his one against.
Like shouting, I'm going to punch you, and maybe it's right when someone ducks your punch.
Yeah, I loved the one against Travis Banks, where Travis Banks blocks it, mm-hmm. and the block is that powerful that it spins Coffee around. Yeah. And he hits him on the way back round.
I did like when it was said, Liguero went for the springboard DD, he sprung through it, and he came back, he just got caught with the lariat.
Yeah.
He spun while his back was turned, so he didn't know it was coming.
It was actually up until last night when I was just like, I don't really like Joe Coffey, and obviously having to watch so many of these NXTs in a row,
yeah.
and with him being promptly featured and having great matches, you know, he's only really had, I believe, two matches since he came back to ICW. He had the tag match the night before, Fear and Loathing, and then
I think he said a couple of like fake club matches, but they were just kind of far and far between because he was keeping suddenly he'd be there and then he wouldn't be there, then he was. Then he
he had the match at the last TV taping against Liam Thompson, which was good. He had the match at Fear and Loathing.
He's going to have a great match coming up at the Square Go with Ilya Dragunov for the Zero-G title.
Yeah, so he had them and like they were good matches, but they weren't much to like change my opinion on him.
Yeah.
And it was just sitting, it was like 2 in the morning, and it's like, I wouldn't hate it if he won. I actually really enjoyed this faction. I like Wolfgang, I like Mark Coffey. Joe, like I said, you know, somebody proves you wrong, you don't mind it in wrestling.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's my pick to win it, and I was just watching, looking at him. I wouldn't mind if you won that match.
Yeah, and I think that match at the Hydro especially suffered because it was essentially a straightforward wrestling match, and we just had that with Whiplash and Hendry the match before. It just felt like the same old thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's much more we can really say about NXT UK other than regardless who wins, it's going to be a fantastic night wrestling wise.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're going to be there for that, we can say we're there for the first ever.
Historic!
First ever historic, monumental NXT UK takeover. Yeah.
When the tickets, when it got announced, it's like, I have to get it.
Definitely.
Yeah. I can't miss it.
I currently am working part time hours and going to college, and I am a skint student, as I have not, after going from 40 hours a week, I have not edited my lifestyle as I refuse to do it. So Scott went buying the tickets and I went, how much was it? It was £30. I went, tell you what, that's my Christmas present. He goes, what? I went, do not buy me anything for Christmas. I do not want anything for Christmas. I am skint, but I am going to that takeover.
I'm buying some heroes anyway. Yeah.
I mean, one of the things to say about this one is the venue's, it's about 3,000 people at the seats.
It's a really good looking venue and a fair sized crowd there anyway. Yeah.
So, and it sold out really quickly, within minutes, really, didn't it? But also, you know, WWE's kind of get, they could have charged more for these tickets than they did. They didn't do. I think front row tickets were £50 and 25 tickets for the rest of the tickets, so that's, you know, to be fair to them, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
It's, pardon me, I wasn't expecting you to come to me when I was taking a drink, but yeah, they didn't charge as much, obviously we've moaned before at the price of WWE house show prices.
Uh-huh.
I think they've realised if they're going to come to the UK and they want the following, that they do need to limit the price they put on tickets.
Yeah, definitely, and like it's a good looking venue and it's where it started, so you can get why this particularly was, because for most people we'd stand out, we had takeover New Orleans, Chicago, Brooklyn, Blackpool.
Yeah.
This is, just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I think this is, for a while, this is gonna these takeovers are gonna be the closest we have to having proper pay-per-views in the UK, because everyone talks about when we're gonna get the next pay-per-view. I think for a while, we're just going to have this and maybe this testing the water before a main roster show comes over.
Yeah, because they did it before with the normal NXT, it was NXT TakeOver London.
Yeah.
And it truly baffled me the fact that we didn't have more, or the fact that when we were doing 2 pay-per-views a month, you know, Ron, like, why they didn't maybe in like February, you know, it's the road to WrestleMania, so people want to get invested.
Definitely.
Bring Raw over, and then maybe the month before Survivor Series, bring a SmackDown one over, and then you can maybe have 1 or 2 Raw guys travel over and attack people, you know, because if you're doing 2 pay-per-views a month, well, you could do one on a Saturday, and quite frankly, a Saturday one would probably get more viewers.
Yeah, cause, and also, like, NXT, when they did London, they started doing a UK tour in the lead-up to it, so you could do it when a UK pay right at the end of your European tour, and you could call the tour the road to insert pay-per-view name here too.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, not that kind of name would be too long, but yeah, and obviously, as we've seen from previous shows and watching NXT UK, this is going to be a very loud crowd with some very unique chants, which the commentators are not going to be able to explain, because you hear a very unique chant, really uncomplimentary, whereas the ring is here, a wild crowd tonight here in the UK.
Yeah, I don't want to grass her in, as she was a guest earlier, but you know, I'm hoping Lucy can keep her language to a minimum when she was when she started chanting to Zach Gibson, "We don't like you." I mean, I'm all for a bit of banter, but some people just take it far too far.
I mean, you know, he's a character on television, but he has feelings.
Yeah, he has feelings.
I think that's, we should wrap up there, guys. I thank you to my panel, Garrett.
Thank you, Scott.
Awesome.
Oh, you're welcome.
Fucking ego on that boy. Yes, remember, be sure to follow us at Suplex Retreat. There'll probably be some live tweeting during TakeOver, whether by us there or whoever's watching it from home. Unlucky buggers who couldn't come with us.
Yeah, me and Sarah plan to do maybe a Instagram takeover, and all of us have access to the Twitter page, so we will probably be posting throughout the day our road to NXT takeover Blackpool, where you could see Gary get more and more frustrated as we get to the venue, having to put up with the four of us in his car.
But so we also have a roving reporter live broadcasts.
Yes, Lucy Kernahan on the scene, on assignment.
You see videos of us just sitting in the back of the car. Gary, are we there yet? No. Are we there yet? If you ask one more time, I'm throwing you in the car.
Ross, stop playing with the radio.
Just turn the radio. On the road again.
The road to takeover starts here.
Points to sign. Yeah, stay tuned and make sure you watch all our shows in our back catalogue. Like, it's coming up this week. We've got the Royal Rumble quiz. So, by Ross, good luck to you with this one.
Yeah, we have Gary and Lucy playing as a team. I don't think that's fair, but if Lay Cool can hold the women's title together, then I'm sure if they win.
We'll defend the title using the Freebird rule.
Yes, so. You, Ollie, and Lucy. Yeah, it's going to be Gary and Lucy, yourself, David Hockney, David Campbell, Andy Mitchell, Josh Horn, Stacey Smith, Stephen Strachan, and as always, there in the studio, Kwaku Aji, who will have a horrible time trying to organise this, and I do apologise in advance. Like how Stephen managed to avoid any blame for it by not appearing on the show. Like, yeah, Kwaku, good luck with this, it was all Ross's idea, bye, and leaves.
Yes, I sit in anticipation of my impending victory. Yeah, I think that's all from us. Thank you for listening, and enjoy NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool.
Bye.
Listen, c***s, I don't care what the f*** you think you're doing, whatever you think is more important with your life, you honking bag of dick tips. You know what you should be doing? You should be going online, you should be subscribing, you should be listening to the back catalogue of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, whatever the f*** you're doing, that's what you should be doing. I don't care if it's your mum's birthday, I don't care if she's feeling contractions, get on it right now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.